Cowboy.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So it's not really a football Friday because we just had preseason games. That's coming up later. But we are in a position where we can at least discuss some of the things that went on in the preseason. But here's my larger take on the Thursday night in the NFL, preseason game number one. Andrew Luck returned to game action. Ryan Tannehill returned to game action. The Dallas Cowboys first-string offense did a few things. I'm trying to think. There's a quarterback battle in Buffalo. All three threw for over 100 yards. Okay, some storylines here. What's the biggest storyline? What's the one storyline that is popping out on all these sports-oriented websites and NFL sites? The Browns. Baker Mayfield. And this is a guy that's not going to start in week number one. The quarterback that is not going to start in week number one got all the attention, is getting all the attention on an 0-16 team. Yes, I get it. He was the number one draft pick. We want to know how the number one draft pick does the first time he participates in an NFL game, and that's what you got here. But the reality was that the Browns at 0-16, and don't really project to be a Super Bowl team or a playoff team. They're probably going to be better than 0-16. That's usually how it works. But still, Baker Mayfield becomes the biggest story of the night because he threw two touchdowns and looked really good doing it. But that's it. I mean, Drew Brees didn't play. Aaron Rodgers didn't play. Tom Brady didn't play. Right? I mean, it's the guys, if they did play, they played for a very brief period of time. Deshaun Watson returned to game action. He was hurt late last year. He completed one pass. But the reality is, when you're looking for anything to extrapolate, right, from what is basically a sea of meaningless outcomes, Baker Mayfield is going to stand out. Now, Saquon Barkley, that was a really nice run. Doesn't mean much, but it's still a good run. For Giant fans who had to put up with a bad, bad year to get this pick, get the pick, and he produces a nice result. Baker Mayfield is the same thing. I put up with 0-16. I got this kid. I want at least something from him. Two touchdowns and a preseason game. Take it with it, whatever you may. I am Tony D. That is Ron Culver as we roll along. We are going to talk to Jonathan Wall, PGAtour.com, later in this hour. I am Tony D. It's SB Nation AM.
Back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So, Ron, I got to tell you this. I was yesterday, and I do this all the time, and it drives my wife crazy. For some reason, my car, if I have to go somewhere, I believe that in my head, I have this magical mathematical formula that can just look at my gas gauge and go, well, that's enough. And that right there, because it's on that section, that will give me 30 more miles to the gallon. So I will be able to make it to my destination and back before I have to pump gas.
Well, of course, you always have the reserve tank, right?
Right, exactly, so right?
Isn't there like an extra gallon just hiding somewhere in your car?
Somewhere in the car that is, my car is never going to run out of gas. It's like an endless fuel supply. Like, so my wife always tells me, she'll take my car, like she'll run a quick errand or something. And then she'll come back and she goes, hey, I know you have to go to that thing tomorrow. You probably need to leave a little early because you're going to need to get gas. And I'm like, well, how much is it? Did the light come on? No, the light didn't come on, but it's near E. Oh, no, I'm good. Literally, I'll just throw, I'm good. At her, and she just goes, no, you're not. Get gas before you leave. Okay, no, I'm good. So yesterday I was driving and I had this meeting with a friend of mine, and it was a good 20 something miles away. So I'm driving down the road, and maybe 5 minutes into the drive, my light goes on, and I'm like, okay, I'm still good. And I keep driving, and all of a sudden I'm looking and going, now I don't know if I'm gonna make it. I'm like, oh no, this is gonna be bad, because the only person I could really call, I could call my friend, or I'm gonna need to call my wife and have her like drop off a can or something. I don't know what I'm going to do. So I'm driving, and I reach that point where I'm like, okay, I'm on this country road. I don't know where I am. I'm like, I can't figure out where I'm supposed to go.
You're in panic.
I'm in panic mode. I'm like, do I try to get to my destination or do I get off this road and try to find? Because I took a back road. Like I'm passing residential areas and like golf courses and stuff.
You probably could have made it, but yeah. It's the fact that once you get into that, mindset, you're running out of gas.
Yeah, exactly.
You're stranded on the side of the road somewhere.
So now I'm like, okay, I'm not going to make it. I'm like, I'm still a good chunk of change away. I'm not going to make it. I've blown this. I'm driving. I make a turn and I go, okay, I think there's a main road over in this area. I'm not 100% sure. So now I'm even more sweating because I'm afraid if I've made that turn, like you said, I'm dead. Like, what if I make the turn and it's not? So luckily for me, I find, okay, look, I start seeing, okay, got it. I see there's some sort of store there. There's a little, looks like a restaurant. I turn and I look and there's this Valero gas station and I lost my mind. I was so relieved.
The angels descended down. Oh, I was like,
and I pull in and I mean, I go and I went inside, great place, clean, wonderful, used the restroom. And I treated myself to some snacks. Cause I was like, I need something.
No, that's a great thing about Valero. They usually have everything there.
Yeah, they do. And it was really great. I was like, I could have at that point, I had burned off so many calories in the panic process.
No, but
that
did you walk in there? Everything. Yeah, but did you walk in there like, you know, like someone who just been stranded out in the desert for 5 days? Like, I just need water.
Yeah, I just was like, I'll take that. And I like chocolate milk. And by the way, I know that probably doesn't go good with the Swedish fish, but I had that combination one time before. That'll be good. And these Hostess cupcakes look massively delicious. I'll grab these two. I was so excited to be there. I mean, and here's the thing. I think if you work at these places, you probably can people read pretty well. Like you probably see the really happy people that are excited to be there. Like that guy was ready to run out of gas.
Oh,
he just
great.
Found us.
We need to talk to someone like about that.
That's exactly right.
I mean, I love one of my favorite things to do in life is people watch at an airport.
Oh, yeah,
you can
completely.
See everything at an airport.
Yep. Absolutely.
People watching at a gas station. If you're working at a gas station, that would be fantastic.
Fantastic. I remember years ago I was living in Denver and I was going to drive to Vegas. I was going out for the Mountain West basketball tournament and instead of flying, I was going to drive because I used to live in Vegas and there were friends I wanted to see. And I was like, I know it's a long drive, but I'm going to take a day and drive it. I'm going to go through the mountains and I'm going to have my car while I'm there and I won't have to pay for a rental car and all that good stuff. So a friend of mine said, have you ever driven there before? And I said, no. And he goes, all right, when you get to Grand Junction, no matter where your car is in the gas, fill up.
Yep.
And I said, okay. He goes, just pull in, fill up. So I drove through, I literally blasted right through Grand Junction and didn't even think. I had plenty of gas and I got through it. I get into Utah and all of a sudden I'm looking around going, nobody lives here. Like there is no sign of life anywhere. And my gas gauge is just going lower and lower and lower. And I'm looking around going, no, there's nobody. There's nothing here. Like there's no town. There's nobody, like, I mean, my eyes could go as far as they could, and there wasn't a town in sight. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm in deep, deep. And the vultures are starting to circle because they know they're going to get a feast on this one. And I'm driving, and I'm like, I'm dead. And there's no cars. I mean, there's nothing.
It's so funny that I did that same exact thing, same place, just the opposite direction. Yeah, I passed Green River, Utah, heading towards Grand Junction. And I knew I had gas, and I was like, you know, doing the math in my head. It's like, I think I can make it to Grand Junction. I don't want to stop right here. Because I think it's called Green River. It's just a small little nothing town in Utah.
Yeah.
And it did. I got to a point where, you know, it's getting closer to, you know, where the light will come on, then the light comes on. Fortunately, though, most of that drive for me was downhill.
Oh, yeah, so you're coasting.
I just kept throwing in a neutral, yep. Coast down the hill, and then, you know, then I sit there, and then finally I saw a gas station, and that, and to me, I wish it was one of the more convenient store gas stations, because I needed something else, and it was a mom-and-pa gas station where the gas prices were obscene.
Yeah, that was the same thing here.
And you sit there and it's like, oh, God, am I really paying this much money for a gallon of gas? I was like, you know, then you start doing the math again, like, oh, maybe if I only do two or three, I can reach, you know,
yeah, I can reach where civilization is. Yeah, that's what happened. So I'm driving and I see this one lone gas station that's just off this exit. And I just start, I pull in and I went in and I said to the lady, I said, "Oh my God, I'm so glad you're here." And she says, "I hear that all the time." And I go, "Of course you do.
That's the name of the gas station, by the way, is I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad you're here." Because I was like, absolutely. I mean, it's like it's a desert. And that's where people die, right? I mean, that's where you, like, oh, we never found him. Because I would have gotten out of my car, I would have walked, and who knows? That would have been like, you know, your right hand is stronger than your left hand, so you would have just naturally gone around in a circle over a period of time. Like, that's the kind of stuff we were talking about. I would have just been out there in the middle of nowhere in Utah, just...
They would have fabricated your story. It's like, oh, no, his body was still in Colorado. His car was in Utah.
His car was in Utah, but his body was in Colorado.
Somebody must have stolen his car.
It was so petrifying. Because I grew up in the East, right? I grew up in the East Coast where, like, and you grew up in California. Like, you know, the gas was just an exit away.
Always. And then, and if it wasn't, you saw one of those signs that says, "Hey, next gas, 100 miles.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, all right, thank you for letting me know. I don't need it right now, but that's helpful.
Out there, it's like, you're on your own. Like, we're not going to tell you anything. It's a guessing game. It's like.
They have some hidden sign somewhere behind some shrubs that says, "Next gas, 350 miles. And you don't even see it. You're flying by on the freeway or some backcountry road.
My brother and I were taking my sister out to L.A. We were, you know, basically a caravan. And my brother and I were in a minivan and she was behind us. And I made everybody stop in Grand Junction. And my brother said the same thing. I was like, "I don't need to stop. Why do we don't need to stop for gas?" I'm like, "There's no gas past this point except this one lone place. And I don't even know how many miles it was. I was in a massive panic.
I couldn't tell you what exit.
I don't know where it is, and don't put me on the hook for that. Just pull over and fill this car up with gasoline.
In fact, I guarantee it's not there. It just magically appears like a reverse Bermuda Triangle.
Exactly. It's just something. I don't even know if it's still open. I was like,
oh, you know it is.
Oh, you better believe it because, was. With those gas prices.
And the fact that I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah. I was surprised when I walked in there would be like no prices. I'm like, "How much for gas? How much you got?" I don't know.
$10?
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
You can't get anything here. $20? Now you're talking about the gallon.
What a monopoly you could have.
Well, I'm trying to remember now because I might have gone to the same gas station. Wasn't it because you're on I-70, right?
Yes.
Was it far off the freeway?
It wasn't like you could see it from the freeway, but it wasn't right off the exit.
Yeah, it wasn't right off the exit. You actually had to drive down a lot.
Yes.
I think I went to the same one.
Yes. It's the only thing there. There's no restaurant
next to
it. There's no stores. There's no houses. There's nothing. It's just a gas station. Like if you had you were just plopped it out of the sky and just dropped it down and that's where it was.
Yep.
Yep.
It's the reverse Bermuda Triangle. It just appears when you need it.
It just appears when you need it. Oh, it was a scary, scary time. Scary time. But here's the thing. My wife, this never happens to my wife, and I don't think it happens to most women. I don't think they play the game we play.
No, they see the light go on. They're smart enough to go, "Oh, the light's on. I better get gas."
Bing, bing, run. Go right. I mean, and I've sometimes, like, I'll ask her where she is. Like, "Oh, where are you?" And she goes, "I stopped to get gas." "Oh, there was plenty of gas when you left. I know I had plenty of gas when I got to the house yesterday." "No, your light went on." "Yeah, but you had enough to get home." "The light went on." "Okay, I can't make the argument anymore."
See, in my car, mine's like almost like Russian roulette because at 50 miles, my light will come on. And I'm like, "Okay, I got, 50 miles to go." At 30 miles, when it's, it's one of those things where it says 30 miles left.
Yeah.
Right after I'm assuming right after it goes to 29, there's no more number. It's just dashes.
That's what I get. That's exactly right.
And then at a certain point, it'll just start flashing. And when it starts flashing, that's when I usually hit panic mode. But I sit there, it's like as soon as the mileage goes, and I'm not actively looking at it. It could have been off for like 10 miles.
Yeah, mine is the same way. It'll give you the mileage.
Like, it's probably somewhere in the 20s. I'm fine.
I get the same thing. I'll get at a certain point. I'll get the mileage. It'll say like you have 50 miles to go before tank is empty, but then that number disappears to low fuel, and then low fuel is in bold. Like it's like blinking. Like you're dead if you don't get to the gas station.
It just says, "Hey, idiot, pull over.
Pull over. What do you do? Stop running this car. Please put some gas in."
See that Valero? Go get some gas.
Go get some gas. Thank you for Valero for being where I absolutely needed you yesterday. All right, 800-777-2907, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, SB Nation AM, I am Tony D. That is Ron Culver. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D. At Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. That's how you can catch us on Twitter. Berryman Automotive Products have been around for 100 years. They make dozens of products to extend the car's life and increase its efficiency. ChemTool is still the best fuel system cleaner on the market. Berryman, all-American made since 1918. Available at AutoZone, Pep Boys, Walmart. 100 years and still going strong. Berryman. All right, so yesterday we brought you the story of how the NCAA said, oh, well, certain elite basketball players can have agents. And if you get drafted, if you don't get drafted, you could come back. Apparently, Ron, this took USA Basketball and the NBA by a complete shock, because apparently they were led to believe that, oh, who's going to grade out these elite basketball players? And then the NCAA was like, well, you guys are. And they're like, wait a minute, we didn't know that. And now it's caught them off guard.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, the foremost evaluator of international talent would be USA Basketball.
That's right. Yes. My God, why couldn't you get everybody in a room and just figure this out before you announce it? And by the way,
doesn't that seem simple? Just like grab some guys from the NBA, grab some guys from USA,
yes,
basketball, NCAA, and just say, hey, who wants to do this? We have an idea. Floor is yours. You know, first volunteer gets it.
USA Basketball is like, wait a minute. Wow, that's on us now? Yeah, that's on you. So we're the ones that get to tell people they're not elite? Yeah, that's you. That's like being the family member that has to go, you know.
Well, USA Basketball is used to doing it all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they don't pull off, I'm trying to think of like a Clint Capela. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe Clint Capela got invited to camp this year.
Maybe, yeah. That's true. What are they going to do now? Like, how are they going to solve this? Does anybody really want to do this?
No.
Does anybody want to do? I don't think they do.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, It's foolish to do just because of the fact that you're not going to be able to determine who's elite just coming out of high school.
No,
except for that rare occasion of, you know, having a LeBron James or a Kobe Bryant come in. But Kwame Brown was supposed to be, you know, he was a high school player straight out of high school, number one draft pick. Michael Jordan picked him. It's like, hey, okay, here's someone who's going to be an elite player. And Kwame Brown never amounted to anything.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why the one and done issue was the NBA was contemplating that, because they were getting to a position where guys were like, they're not ready for this.
Yeah, he needed, I mean, except, you know, very rare occasion you'll have someone like a LeBron James who would have wasted his talents in college.
Yeah,
he was ready to play NBA. Kobe Bryant was ready for the NBA right out of high school.
And that to me was always, that was my biggest problem with the whole NBA rule, because it did, there were guys like Kobe and LeBron, and I know that's making a judgment call, and it's also rolling the dice and saying, because every kid who thinks he could go right from high school to the NBA, I mean, most kids don't say, you know, I seem to lack the maturity to handle that kind of role. Like, most kids just think they can do it. So you kind of need an outside influence to say, We don't think you're ready to handle the pressure and the scrutiny and the money and the fame and everything that kind of falls on you when you're a top pick in the NBA and you're kind of becoming the new face of a franchise and getting a real excited fan base around you, and you better deliver the goods. Almost every kid thinks they can do that. Most of them can't. But the one and done situation, when the NBA said you got to be 1 year removed out of high school, it put everybody under the same umbrella, and we watched Kobe and LeBron not be under that umbrella. We watched them be completely different. And so there was no way to make that determination. Right. And so, and this is the other thing people got to understand here, because I've been hearing people say, well, the NCAA has to get rid of one and done. No, the NBA has to get rid of one. The NCAA has nothing to do with that. The NCAA has nothing to do with one and done. They are just the beneficiaries or I don't know, you want to say whatever the opposite of that is, to what that NBA rule is, right? The NCAA is getting talent it normally would not have gotten because of the rule.
Yeah, because there are certain players like Emmanuel Mudiay, who decided, yeah. I was like, I don't want to go to college just from one year.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
goes to overseas.
Yep, and plays overseas and says, I can do this for a year.
Yeah, it's not an NCAA rule that you have to go to college.
And that's the other thing, is that that's another issue, is that the NCAA can't fix the one-and-done rule because the NCAA can't contractually obligate somebody to be a college athlete. You are a college athlete at the will of yourself. I mean, you can quit a team anytime. You can quit college anytime. I mean, there are consequences. I mean, you can't, you know, if you quit, you come back, you got to sit out or whatever, however those rules work. But you can't say, like, if I go to school for engineering and halfway through my junior year or my sophomore year, my dad's company is falling apart and I need to go home and help run that, the school doesn't say, oh, you know, they may, scholarship wise, it might be a different story, but they don't tell me, no, you have to stay in school. You're obligated to stay in school. It's the same thing with college basketball. You can't make an athlete stay there and take classes and take tests. You can't make them stay there for any longer than they want. So they can't fix that. They can't keep a kid in college longer than he wants. It's not going to work, especially when they don't get paid. So they can't fix that rule at all. So I think this is like a compromise to this until the NBA gets rid of the one and done, which is to say, we know these student athletes are coming in that don't really want to be here, but in order to sort of facilitate this or make it easier, we're going to let them have agents when they're in high school to give them the best results or best, you know, the best conversation. Because that's the one thing these guys are lacking in high school, is right. They're lacking a professional guidance from somebody that says, hey, you know what? There's an option. I can put you in a league in Greece for a year, or I can put you in Spain for a year. It seems to me, and I don't know the details of that, but if I'm a high school kid and that's what I want to do, and I know I want to do that, I go to the agent and just forego forego college. And now this is, I guess, is a way for them to not forego college, but get professional advice so that they could say, well, I can get you $100,000 if you want to go play in Lithuania, but you got to play in Lithuania, or you can go play for Kentucky and, you know, get professional advice that way. But again, something that they thought was going to be, hey, look at us, is turning into everybody criticizing this and everybody looking at it going, I still don't even know really what this is and how this is going to work. So I guess it wasn't the big PR splash they immediately thought. Now we'll see. But judging these players, I don't know how you, and what can a player sue if they don't get picked? Like I forfeited all of this.
I don't know if you can, but some of them will.
You can't. Some of them are going to say, wait a minute, I've done these accomplishments. I did more accomplishments than this other guy. He was able to get an agent and I wasn't.
Yeah, and it has to be a certain life. I mean, because you know, we made this argument yesterday that, you know, coming out of college or even coming out of high school, Steph Curry would not have been considered an elite player.
Right.
But now, I mean, he's arguably, you know, one of the top five players in the world.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, obviously he doesn't have an argument to say, you know, I could have been an elite player if you guys had just thrown that stigma on me.
Yeah, exactly. And there's probably going to be an elite player or two that are going to get that label that never do anything in the NBA. Like we were talking about Andrew Wiggins, right? I mean, he's still doing something, but you know what I mean? Or Kwame Brown is a better example.
Kwame Brown, he would have been an elite player.
Yep. They would have graded him elite. He would have got an agent. He would have gotten his advice and gone for that. He was supposed to go to Florida to play for Billy Donovan. But
he probably should have.
Probably should have.
But you know, there were millions of reasons why he didn't.
And it's too bad, too, because, you know, I would like to think when I was 18 that if you thrusted fame, fortune, women, pressure, I would have been, I would have folded like a tent. I would have collapsed under all that weight.
And then there was what the professional league would have offered.
Yay, that's right. All right, we'll talk to Jonathan Wall, PGAtour.com on the round one. Tigers performance, Ricky Fowler, all the things that are going on in St. Louis. That is next, SB Nation AM. Thank you.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, the PGA Championship going on at Belrive Country Club in St. Louis, final major of the year. Jonathan Wall joins us from PGAtour.com to discuss round one and this tournament. How are you, Jonathan?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Gary Woodland, Kansas's own Gary Woodland. What kind of player is he?
I mean, he's a good player. He's won recently on the PGA Tour, but he has struggled mightily the rest of this season. And I think his best finish is probably about a top 20 in major championships. So this is kind of what we've expected in recent years from PGA Tour winners, guys that just kind of come out of nowhere. We haven't really seen that in recent majors. Guys have kind of had the form at some point during that season. So he's definitely a guy that people are probably going, wow, did not expect to see that coming. I think he's actually missed 8 cuts this year. So, a little bit of a surprise, but again, it's only round one. So, sometimes you're supposed to see one of those guys that surprises everybody.
Tell me about the golf course, because I know it hosted a major before, but that was forever ago, in 92. I know it's hosted some Champion Tour events, but it looks like I watch it on TV. It seemed like all the holes looked kind of the same, but I might be missing something of the beauty of the golf course. What kind of course is this?
Now, you're actually not missing anything. It's funny. This is your typical Parkland golf course. If a golf fan were to flip on the TV each week, this is pretty much what you're looking at. 8 out of 10 weeks. It's very much just tree lined. It looks pretty, but there's just not a lot there. It was funny, Pat Perez after yesterday's round said, trying to kind of massage the quote, but said, hey, look, there's really no strategy here. They're big fairways, big greens. If you hit the right quadrant where the flag is, you're going to be okay. And, as funny as the quote was of a PGA Tour player saying, hey, there's no strategy at a major championship.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of right. The golf course received a ton of rain right before the first round. That softened it up even more to the point that the PGA of America left a letter for players saying, look, we know that the green speeds at a major are supposed to be fast, but because of the rain we've received, the green speeds are going to be slow. So you're thinking a slow golf course already with receptive greens. And, oh, by the way, they're not going to be running fast. So I'm not surprised that guys went low in the first round and we saw somebody shoot 64. But, again, just not a lot of strategy there. You just kind of got to find the fairways and the greens. And if you do that, you should be in good shape.
Is that why I kept hearing guys – I mean, it felt like I kept hearing it a lot, where people were saying – the first time they saw the golf course was this week. And I don't know how PGA Tour guys run their schedule, but I always thought they found time in the months to prepare, going a month or two in advance. Is it because they just knew, hey, look, there's really nothing to go scout. I kind of know this course based on what I see, and it's not going to be that much.
Exactly. And even Justin Rose said that he didn't play it until, I think it was Wednesday of this week, and he felt like he called it kind of playing the golf course semi-blind. But, again, he wasn't that concerned because it's a golf course layout that they see a lot during the season. So, yeah, nobody was really fretting about this layout. There's just not a whole lot there to trick you out and trip you up. And, most of these players, they've got their caddies that come in and do the recon work before they arrive, usually on Mondays. So, the caddies have a pretty good idea before their player gets there what's going on. But again, there's not a lot going on there, and that's why I found Pat Perez's comment so funny. There's a strategy there, but there really is no strategy. You just kind of do like what everybody else says. You find the fairway, you find the green, you hope you make the putt.
So that being said, Tiger Woods struggles early, but then, cleans it up and fires a 70. Is that an impressive feat, or should he have done that based on the way the course is set up?
Yeah, I think if you're a fan of Tiger Woods, you're probably hoping for a lower first round score. But I think that's his best score since 2012 at a PGA Championship. He's never really fared well in the first round of this tournament. But I think for a lot of people watching the early round for Tiger, myself included, you know, it looked like he was gassed. And that was the one thing that I think a lot of people were concerned about is Tiger looked really tired on Sunday at Firestone. And it looked like it kind of continued. He talked about taking, you know, multiple ice baths during the day. And it's just one of those things where, you know, look, this is Tiger's return to golf. We're not quite sure how he's going to play. You know, he's played well, hasn't talked about the injuries, but when you're talking about back-to-back weeks and, you know, 5 out of 6 weeks, I mean, he's going to be playing in the FedEx Cup playoffs. It just makes you wonder how tired he is. But we did. I was very impressed with the way that he was able to grind out an even par round, because early on it looked like he could be, you know, trunk slamming time for Tiger Woods early on in the first round, which you almost never see. But he is one of those guys, you know, it's the reason why he holds the record that will never be broken for most consecutive cuts made. Even when he's not playing his best, he still finds a way to stay in the mix. So, yeah, I would say it's a pretty impressive round for a guy that a lot of people thought was kind of running on fumes a little bit.
Jonathan Wall joins us, PGAtour.com, on the PGA Championship. I know you probably get this question a lot in terms of this particular major, but if the Masters is the course and the U.S. Open is the setup and the British Open is the history and weather, what defines the PGA? What characteristic does that have?
You know, I think it's probably got to be that the fact that the club pros get into this major championship, you know, and they actually have a bunch of automatic spots for these guys. I mean, these club pros are pretty much, you know, living a life that, you know, some people think would be glamorous, but, you know, they're doing teaching lessons during the day, and they're trying to, you know, get in rounds and, you know, play golf. And I think a lot of people think that a club pro gets to play a lot of golf. You know, they don't. They are constantly trying to make sure that the membership at their course is happy. So they don't get a lot of time to carve out rounds. So I think that's kind of what makes this tournament different, is that you let these guys that, you know, most of them had aspirations of going pro, but it just never panned out. So they ended up going the club pro route and working at a local golf course. And they get a chance to play in this event and you know, go toe-to-toe with the best players in the world. So I think that's probably the difference. You know, a lot of people say the PGA is the fourth major. You know, yeah, to some extent, I feel like it kind of gets shoehorned in there. It's and a lot of it's just because of where it is on the schedule. You know, it comes at a very breakneck pace time of the golf season, because you're rolling out of the Open Championship, then you're going quickly into the PGA, and then you're exiting, you're going right to the FedEx Cup playoffs where guys are going to be vying for $10 million in one weekend. So it is. It's one of those tournaments where I feel it kind of gets forgotten. But look, the difference for the PGA starting next season is that it's going to be moving to a new month. So it will no longer be in August. It's going to be moving to May. So it's going to get its own spot on the schedule, and I think that's what they've just been trying to do is spotlight each major. So I'll be curious to see if that changes people's perception of the PGA, or if they still continue to view it as you know, the quote-unquote fourth major championship. But, yeah, I think the difference is that they let the club pros in, which I still love.
Let's go back to Tiger for a second. All right, so we had this period of time where Tiger was working on his back and he wasn't a factor in the game, and then these really young stars started being in the headline. When Tiger comes back, we start noticing ratings are back up and there's more interest. But how is it being perceived? Is it being perceived that Tiger is now an added bonus to something that's already good, or are people going, oh, wow, we really needed him to come back, and thank God he's back?
You know, I think it's a little bit mixed. I think for the avid golf fans, I really think that they probably view this as an added bonus, because a lot of them, you know, until 2013, or from 2013 on, I'm sorry, we really haven't seen Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of been the difference, is now we're getting to see Tiger Woods on a regular basis, not just sporadically. You're kind of holding your breath and wondering if his back's going to hold up on a certain shot, or, you know, we've seen Tiger log a full season. So I think for a lot of people, it does kind of feel like a bonus, but for others, you know, Tiger Woods still is the needle in golf. And I truly believe that. But look, the difference between this Tiger and the Tiger of old is, you know, the Tiger of old probably would have found a way to maybe close out a couple of these tournaments, you know, like the Open Championship when he had the lead. And I think that's where people start to wonder, you know, yeah, it's really great to see Tiger back, but I really want to see him win. But maybe I'm coming to that realization that he just isn't going to win at the same clip that he won at when he was in his prime. And so I think people are kind of struggling with that right now. You know, it's great to have Tiger there, but you want to see him win. I mean, that's the whole reason that we watch our heroes on television is we want to see them succeed. And in golf, the only way to do that is to end up in the winner's circle. So, yeah, it's so tough. The golf scene right now is so deep. There are so many good young players out there. You know, we're seeing Tiger play well, but I think, you know, end of the day, he's probably, you know, right where he's supposed to be, a top 50 player in the world. He's probably going to win a couple of times before he decides to retire. But, you know, it just when it comes to the major championships, I don't know. I still feel like it's a very much a gray area. So good to have him back. He definitely adds a lot. But, yeah, I think there are two different camps there.
In terms of the heat, how hot is it? And is that a factor for some of these guys? I mean, or are they just so conditioned, prepared, hydrated that it's just weather?
Yeah, I mean, for these guys, it doesn't matter. It's a hot event. I mean, let's put it this way, it's sweltering in St. Louis right now. I would say it's either that. It's either sweltering or steamy. I'll use one of those. But yeah, it's one of those tournaments where guys, they're conditioned to play in weather like this. I think the nice thing that the PGA of America does during this major is they allow the players to wear shorts during practice rounds. So a lot of guys this week I saw were taking advantage of being able to wear shorts and not have to melt during the practice round. But, you know, come Thursday, these guys, just like other professional athletes, you got to put on your uniform. And for those guys, that just means you got to wear pants. But, yeah. You know, the materials on all these pants now, I mean, they're so breathable compared to all the stuff that they used to wear back in the 80s and 90s. But, you know, it probably doesn't even feel all that bad. But yeah, it is hot there. It's supposed to be hot through the weekend. And again, you know, that's what you get when you play a major championship in August. Big surprise, I know.
One last question. I know the Ryder Cup will be filled up after this. What's the favorite? Or when you guys talk about who the picks are going to be, who's the leading candidates?
You know, I feel like it's probably got to be the American team right now. You know, I think most people are probably talking at this very moment, because next week they make the selections, is who are going to be the captain's picks for Jim Furyk's team. I mean, you're looking at a potential Tiger and Phil selection pairing for the American Ryder Cup team, which I think would be huge. From a viewing standpoint, you know, I don't necessarily know if you know, what Tiger's going to be like that late in the year, depending on how many FedEx Cup events he ends up getting to play. But, yeah, I would say right now they're definitely talking about who the captain's picks are going to be. But you know, you've got a really strong European team, and I always feel like the years that everybody goes, man, the American team is stacked, they're just going to walk right over the Europeans, or the years where the European team just comes up and just absolutely just slaps the American team right across the face. So, you know, I love this time of the year, going right into the Ryder Cup year, because it is by far one of my favorite events. But, you know, yeah, the American team has the better players. You know, they hold all the major championships right now. American players do. And that hasn't happened since 2001, when Tiger held all the major championships. So, you know, on paper, sure, the American team looks stronger. But, yeah, I never count out the European team. And they're playing in Paris this year, so it's going to be on European soil. And I think that might give them a little bit of an advantage. So I think it's going to be very tight. As opposed to, you know, some of the previous instances where maybe it wasn't as tight. I think this year is going to be really close.
Jonathan, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the tournament. And thank you again for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks again.
You got it. Jonathan Wall, PGAtour.com. He is right on the money. I love that when he talked about how many years, and I love the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup is one of my favorite events. How many years did the United States put together a team where you looked and you saw Mickelson and Woods and Furyk and some of these top golfers and said, there is no way the Europeans are going to beat them. And then the Europeans come and just slaughter them. I mean, just it's many, many times that has happened. Many times where the European team is stronger than it looks. And the United States team is more vulnerable than it looks. And they're going to be in Europe, and the European fans are vocal and they're fun and they really get behind Team Europe, and they will feed off that energy. I love the Ryder Cup. If you're not a golf fan, you don't watch, but you know what? I know it's football season. Just turn it on, the Ryder Cup, when it's on, just to watch a little bit of it. Feel the energy that's coming through. Cause even if you don't like golf, if you appreciate sort of real competition for pride, that's the Ryder Cup. None of the guys get paid. It is all about country, and it's amazing what they do. It's unbelievable. 800-777-2907. I am Tony D. It's SB Nation AM.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you can be with us here on SB Nation AM. Boy, it is hot in St. Louis. I like to golf, but I don't like to golf that hot. It's that oppressive humidity that you know all too well down in Houston, Ron. That I just can't, I don't know. Ugh.
Makes the ball fly farther.
It does. That's right. The science behind it does make the ball fly farther. I always thought that was the exact opposite. I thought humidity was like obstruction in the air. And then somebody explained the physics of it. And I was like, okay, that's over my head. I'll just take your word for it.
Yep.
Like on those hot, they always say that with baseball, like those hot nights. It's like, it's a hot, humid night. The ball should be flying here out of Fenway Park. I'm like, wow, why is that? There's more molecules. There's more water molecules in the air. Doesn't that buffer the ball? And nope, does not. Makes the ball fly further. So that's golf for you. Unreal. All right, happy Friday as we roll along. We'll talk some preseason football coming up. I am Tony D. That is Ron Culver. At Tony D Radio is where you can find me on Twitter, at Ron Culver with two N's. That's where you can find Ron on SB Nation Radio.